lemon, and the captain himself had an orange splatter off his foot. No answer came from within the litter. Doran Martell stayed cloaked within his silken walls until the thicker walls of the castle swallowed all of them, and the portcullis came down behind them with a rattling crunch. The sounds of shouting dwindled away slowly. Princess Ariane was waiting in the outer ward to greet her father, with half the court about her. The old blind Senescal Ricasso, Sir Manfrey Martell, the castellan, young Maester Miles with his grey robes and silky perfumed beard, 20 of Dornish knights in flowing linen of 50 hues. Little Miss Sella Baratheon stood with her scepter, and Sir Aris of the Kingsguard, sweltering in his white enameled scales. Princess Ariane strode to the litter on snakeskin sandals laced up to her thighs. Her hair was a mane of jet-black ringlets that fell to the small of her back, and around her brow was a band of copper suns. "She is still a little thing," the captain thought. Where the sand snakes were tall, Ariane took after her mother, who stood but 5'2". Yet beneath her jeweled girdle and loose layers of flowing purple silk and yellow samite, she had a woman's body, lush and roundly curved. "Father," she announced as the curtains opened, "Sunspear rejoices at your return."
"Yes, I heard the joy."
The prince smiled wanly and cupped his daughter's cheek with a reddened, swollen hand.
"You look well. Captain, be so good as to help me down from here."
Hotar slid his long axe into its sling across his back and gathered the prince into his arms, tenderly, so as not to jar his swollen joints. Even so, Doran Martell bit back a gasp of pain.
"I have commanded the cooks to prepare a feast for this evening," Ariane said, "with all your favorite dishes. I fear I could not do them justice."
The prince glanced slowly around the yard.
"I do not see Tyene. She begs a private word. I sent her to the throne room to await your coming."
The prince sighed.
"Very well. Captain, the sooner I am done with this, the sooner I may rest."
Hotar bore him up the long stone steps of the Tower of the Sun to the great round chamber beneath the dome, where the last light of the afternoon was slanting down through thick windows of many-colored glass to dapple the pale marble with diamonds of 50 colors. There, the third sand snake awaited them. She was sitting cross-legged on a pillow beneath the raised dais, where the high seats stood, but she rose as they entered, dressed in a clinging gown of pale blue samite, with sleeves of mirish lace that made her look as innocent as the maid herself. In one hand was a piece of embroidery she had been working on, in the other a pair of golden needles. Her hair was gold as well, and her eyes were deep blue pools, and yet somehow they reminded the captain of her father's eyes, though Oberon's had been as black as night. "All of Prince Oberon's daughters have his viper eyes," Hotar realized suddenly. "The color does not matter."
"Uncle," said Tyene Sand, "I have been waiting for you. Captain, help me to the high seat."
There were 2 seats on the dais, near twin to one another, save that one had the Martell spear inlaid in gold upon its back, whilst the other bore the blazing Roynish sun that had flown from the masts of Nymeria's ships when first they came to dawn. The captain placed the prince beneath the spear and stepped away.
"Does it hurt so much?"
Lady Tyene's voice was gentle, and she looked as sweet as summer strawberries. Her mother had been a scepter, and Tyene had an air of almost otherworldly innocence about her.
"Is there aught that I might do to ease your pain?"
"Say what you would, and let me rest. I am weary, Tyene."
"I made this for you, uncle."
Tyene unfolded the piece she'd been embroidering. It showed her father, Prince Oberyn, mounted on a sand steed and armored all in red, smiling.
"When I finish, it is yours to help you remember him."
"I am not like to forget your father."
"That is good to know.
Many
have wondered.
Lord Tywin has promised us the mountain's head.
He is so kind, but a headsman's sword is no fit end for brave Sir Gregor. We have prayed so long for his death, it is only fair that he pay for it as well. I know the poison that my father used, and there is none slower or more agonizing. Soon we may hear the mountain screaming, even here in Sunspear.
Prince Doran sighed. Obara cries to me for war. Nim will be content with murder.
And you?
War,
said Tyene, though not my sister's war. Dornishmen fight best at home. So I say, let us hone our spears and wait. When the Lannisters and the Tyrells come down on us, we shall bleed them in the passes and bury them beneath the blowing sands, as we have 100 times before.
If they should come down on us.
Oh, but they must, or see the realm riven once more, as it was before we wed the dragons. Father told me so. He said we had the imp to thank for sending us Princess Myrcella. She is so pretty, don't you think?
I wish that I had curls like hers. She was made to be a queen just like her mother.
Dimples bloomed in Tyene's cheeks. I would be honored to arrange the wedding and to see to the making of the crowns as well. Tristan and Myrcella are so innocent. I thought perhaps white gold with emeralds to match Myrcella's eyes. Oh, diamonds and pearls would serve as well, so long as the children are wed and crowned. Then we need only hail Myrcella as the first of her name, Queen of the Andals, the Rhoynar, and the First Men, and lawful heir to the 7 kingdoms of Westeros, and wait for the lions to come.
The lawful heir?
The prince snorted.
She is older than her brother, explained Tyene, as if he were some fool.
By law, the Iron Throne should pass to her.
By Dornish law.
When good King Daeron wed Princess Myria and brought us into his kingdom, it was agreed that Dornish law would always rule in Dorne, and Myrcella is in Dorne, as it happens.
So she is. His tone was grudging. Let me think on it.
Tyrene grew cross. You think too much, uncle.
Do I?
Father said so.
Oberyn thought too little.
Some men think because they are afraid to do. There is a difference between fear and caution. Oh, I must pray that I never see you frightened, uncle. You might forget to breathe.
She raised a hand. The captain brought the butt of his long axe down upon the marble with a thump.
My lady, you presume. Step from the dais, if it please you.
I meant no harm, captain. I love my uncle as I know he loved my father.
Tyene went to one knee before the prince.
I have said all I came to say, uncle. Forgive me if I gave offense. My heart is broken all to pieces. Do I still have your love?
Always.
Give me your blessing then, and I shall go.
Doran hesitated half a heartbeat before placing his hand on his niece's head.
Be brave, child.
Oh, how not? I am his daughter.
No sooner had she taken her leave than Maester Calliot hurried to the dais.
My prince, she did not. Here, let me see your hand.
He examined the palm first, then gently turned it upside down to sniff at the back of the prince's fingers.
No. Good. That is good. There are no scratches, so...
The prince withdrew his hand.
Maester, could I trouble you for some milk of the poppy? A thimble cup will suffice.
The poppy? Yes, to be sure.
Now, I think...
Doran Martell urged gently, and Calliot scurried to the stairs. Outside, the sun had set. The light within the dome was the blue of dusk, and all the diamonds on the floor were dying. The prince sat in his high seat beneath the Martell spear, his face pale with pain. After a long silence, he turned to Ariohota.
Captain,
he said,
how loyal are my guards?
Loyal? The captain did not know what else to say.
All of them, or some?
They are good men, good Dornish men. They will do as I command. He thumped his long axe on the floor. I will bring the head of any man who would betray you. I want no heads. I want obedience. You have it. Serve, obey, protect. Simple vows for a simple man. How many men are needed? I will leave that for you to decide. It may be that a few good men will serve us better than a score. I want this done as quickly and as quietly as possible, with no blood spilled. Quick and quiet and bloodless. Aye. What is your command? You will find my brother's daughters. Take them into custody, and confine them in the cells atop the spear tower. The sand snakes. The captain's throat was dry. All eight, my prince? The little ones also? The prince considered. Ilaria's girls are too young to be a danger, but there are those who might seek to use them against me. It would be best to keep them safe in hand. Yes, the little ones as well. But first, secure Tyene, Nymeria, and Obara. As my prince commands. His heart was troubled. My little princess will mislike this. What of Sarella? She is a woman grown, almost 20. Unless she returns to Dawn, there's naught I can do about Sarella save pray that she shows more sense than her sisters. Leave her to her game. Gather up the others. I shall not sleep until I know that they are safe and under guard. It will be done. The captain hesitated. When this is known in the streets, the common folk will howl. All Dawn will howl, said Doran Martell in a tired voice. I only pray Lord Tywin hears them in King's Landing, so he might know what a loyal friend he has in Sunspear.
Egg had worked manfully at the campsite. Dunk was pleased. He had been half afraid his squire would run off again.
Did you get a good price for your palfrey? The boy asked. How did you know I'd sold her? You rode off and walked back, and if robbers had stolen her, you'd be more angry than you are.
I got enough for this. Dunk took out his new armor to show the boy. If you're ever to be a knight, you'll need to know good steel from bad. Look here. This is fine work. This mail is double chain, each link bound to two others, see? It gives more protection than single chain, and the helm? Pates rounded the top, see how it curves? A sword or an axe will slide off, where they might bite through a flat-topped helm. Dunk lowered the great helm over his head. How does it look?
There's no visor,
Egg pointed out.
There's air holes.
Visors are points of weakness. Steely Pate had said as much.
If you knew how many knights have taken an arrow in the eye as they lifted their visor for a suck of cool air, you'd never want one, he'd told Dunk.
There's no crest either, said Egg. It's just plain.
Dunk lifted off the helm.
Plain is fine for the likes of me. See how bright the steel is? It will be your task to keep it that way. You know how to scour mail?
In a barrel of sand, said the boy. But you don't have a barrel. Did you buy a pavilion too, sir?
I didn't get that good a price.
The boy is too bold for his own good. Oh, to beat that out of him. He knew he would not, though. He liked the boldness. He needed to be bolder himself. My squire is braver than I am, and more clever.
You did well here, Egg, Dunk told him. On the morrow, you'll come with me. Have a look at the tourney grounds. We'll buy oats for the horses and fresh bread for ourselves. Maybe a bit of cheese as well. They were selling good cheese at one of the stalls.
I won't need to go into the castle, will I?
Why not? One day, I mean to live in a castle. I hope to win a place above the salt before I'm done.
The boy said nothing. Perhaps he fears to enter a lord's hall, Dunk reflected. That's no more than might be expected. He will grow out of it in time. He went back to admiring his armor and wondering how long he would wear it. Sir Manfred was a thin man with a sour look on his face. He wore a black surcoat slashed with the purple lightning of House Dondarrion, but Dunk would have remembered him anyway by his unruly mane of red-gold hair. "Sir Arlen served your Lord Father when he and Lord Carron burned the Vulture King out of the Red Mountains, sir," he said from one knee. "I was only a boy then, but I squired for him. Sir Arlen of Pennytree." Sir Manfred scowled.
"No, I know him not. Nor you, boy."
Dunk showed him the old man's shield.
"This was his sigil, the winged chalice."
"My lord father took 800 knights and near 4,000 foot into the mountains. I cannot be expected to remember every one of them, nor what shields they carried. It may be that you are with us, but..."
Sir Manfred shrugged. Dunk was struck speechless for an instant.
"The old man took a wound in your father's service. How can you have forgotten him?" "They will not allow me to challenge unless some knight or lord will vouch for me."
"And what is that to me?" said Sir Manfred. "I've given you enough of my time, sir."
If he went back to the castle without Sir Manfred, he was lost. Dunk eyed the purple lightning embroidered across the black wool of Sir Manfred's surcoat and said,
"I remember your father telling the camp how your house got its sigil. One stormy night, as the first of your line bore a message across the Dornish marches, an arrow killed his horse beneath him and spilled him to the ground. Two Dornishmen came out of the darkness in ringmail and crested helms. His sword had broken beneath him when he fell. When he saw that, he thought he was doomed. But as the Dornishmen closed to cut him down, lightning cracked from the sky. It was a bright, burning purple, and it split, striking the Dornishmen in their steel and killing them both where they stood. The message gave the Storm King victory over the Dornish, and in thanks he raised the messenger to lordship. He was the first Lord Dondarrion. So he took for his arms a forked purple lightning bolt on a black field powdered with stars."
If Dunk thought the tale would impress Sir Manfred, he could not have been more wrong.
"Every potboy and groom who has ever served my father hears that story soon or late. Knowing it does not make you a knight. Be gone with you, sir."
It was with a leaden heart that Dunk returned to Ashford Castle, wondering what he might say so that Plummer would grant him the right of challenge. The steward was not in his turret chamber, however. A guard told him that he might be found in the great hall.
"Shall I wait here?"
Dunk said.
"How long will he be?"
"How should I know? Do what you please."
The great hall was not so great as halls went, but Ashford was a small castle. Dunk entered through a side door and spied the steward at once. He was standing with Lord Ashford and a dozen other men at the top of the hall. He walked toward them, beneath a wall hung with wool tapestries of fruits and flowers.
"More concerned if they were your sons, I'll wager,"
an angry man was saying as Dunk approached. His straight hair and square-cut beard were so fair they seemed white in the dimness of the hall, but as he got closer, he saw that they were in truth a pale silvery color touched with gold.
"Daron has done this before,"
another replied. Plummer was standing so as to block Dunk's view of the speaker.
"You should never have commanded him to enter the lists. He belongs on a tourney field no more than Ares does or Ragel." "By which you mean he'd sooner ride a whore than a horse?"
the first man said. Thickly built and powerful, the prince, he was surely a prince, wore a leather brigandine covered with silver studs beneath a heavy black cloak trimmed with ermine. Pox scars marked his cheeks, only partly concealed by his silvery beard.
"I do not need to be reminded of my son's failings, brother. He has only 18 years. He can change. He will change, gods be damned. Or I swear I'll see him dead." "Don't be an utter fool. Daron is what he is, but he is still your blood and mine. I have no doubt Sir Roland will turn him up and Aegon with him. When the tourney is over, perhaps. Arion is here. He is a better lance than Daron in any case, if it is the tourney that concerns you."
Dunk could see the speaker now, He was seated in the high seat, a sheaf of parchments in one hand, Lord Ashford hovering at his shoulder. Even seated, he looked to be a head taller than the other, to judge from the long, straight legs stretched out before him. His short cropped hair was dark and peppered with gray, his strong jaw clean shaven. His nose looked as though it had been broken more than once. Though he was dressed very plainly, in green doublet, brown mantle, and scuffed boots, there was a weight to him, a sense of power and certainty. It came to Dunk that he had walked in on something that he ought never have heard. "I had best go and come back later when they are done," he decided. But it was already too late. The prince with the silvery beard suddenly took note of him.
"Who are you? And what do you mean by bursting in on us?" he demanded harshly.
"He is the knight that our good steward was expecting," the seated man said,
smiling at Dunk in a way that suggested he had been aware of him all the time.
"You and I are the intruders here, brother. Come closer, sir."
Dunk edged forward, uncertain what was expected of him. He looked at Plummer, but got no help there. The pinch-faced steward who had been so forceful yesterday now stood silent, studying the stones of the floor.
"My lords," he said, "I asked Sir Manfred Dundarian to vouch for me so I might enter the lists, but he refuses. He says he knows me not. Sir Rollin served him, though, I swear it. I have his sword and shield. I—"
"A shield and a sword do not make a knight,"
declared Lord Ashford, a big bald man with a round red face.
"Plummer has spoken to me of you. Even if we accept that these arms belong to this Sir Arlen of Penitry, it may well be that you found him dead and stole them. Unless you have some better proof of what you say, some writing or—"
"I remember Sir Arlen of Penitry," the man in the high seat said quietly. "He never won a tourney that I know, but he never shamed himself either. At King's Landing 16 years ago, he overthrew Lord Stokeworth and the bastard of Harrenhal in the melee. And many years before at Lannisport, he unhorsed the Grey Lion himself. The lion was not so grey then, to be sure."
"He told me about that many a time," said Dunk.
The tall man studied him.
"Then you will remember the Grey Lion's true name, I have no doubt."
For a moment there was nothing in Dunk's head at all.
1,000 times the old man had told that tale. 1,000 times, the lion, his name, his name, his name.
He was near despair when suddenly it came.
"Sir Damon Lannister," he shouted. "The Grey Lion, he's Lord of Casterly Rock now."
"So he is," said the tall man pleasantly. "And he enters the lists on the morrow."
He rattled the sheaf of papers in his hand.
"How can you possibly remember some insignificant hedge knight who chanced to unhorse Damon Lannister 16 years ago?"
said the prince with the silver beard frowning.
"I make it a practice to learn all I can of my foes."
"Why would you deign to joust with a hedge knight?"
"It was 9 years past at Storm's End. Lord Baratheon held a hastelude to celebrate the birth of a grandson. The lots made Sir Arlen my opponent in the first tilt. We broke 4 lances before I finally unhorsed him."
7,
insisted Dunk.
"And that was against the Prince of Dragonstone."
No sooner were the words out than he wanted them back.
"Dunk the lung thick as a castle wall," he could hear the old man chiding.
"So it was."
The prince with the broken nose smiled gently.
"Tales grow in the telling, I know. Do not think ill of your old master. But it was 4 lances only, I fear."
Dunk was grateful that the hall was dim. He knew his ears were red.
"My lord—" "No, that's wrong too. Your grace—"
He fell to his knees and lowered his head.
"As you say, 4. I meant no— I never— The old man, Sir Arlen, he used to say I was thick as a castle wall and slow as an oryx."
"And strong as an oryx, by the look of you," said Baylor Breakspear. "No harm was done, sir. Rise."
Dunk got to his feet, wondering if he should keep his head down or if he was allowed to look a prince in the face.
"I am speaking with Baylor Targaryen,
Prince of Dragonstone, Hand of the King, and heir apparent to the Iron Throne of Aegon the Conqueror. What could a hedge knight dare say to such a person? You gave him back his horse and armor and took no ransom. I remember, he stammered. The old Sir Arlen, he told me you were the soul of chivalry, and that one day the Seven Kingdoms would be safe in your hands.
Not for many a year still, I pray, Prince Baylor said.
No, said Dunk, horrified. He almost said, I didn't mean that the king should die, but stopped himself in time. I am sorry, my lord. Your grace, I mean.
Belatedly, he recalled that the stocky man with the silver beard had addressed Prince Baylor as brother.
He is blood of the dragon as well. Damn me for a fool.
He could only be Prince Maekar, the youngest of King Darren's four sons. Prince Ares was bookish, and Prince Ragel, mad, meek, and sickly. Neither was like to cross half the realm to attend a tourney, but Maekar was said to be a redoubtable warrior in his own right, though ever in the shadow of his eldest brother.
You wish to enter the lists, is that it? Asked Prince Baylor. That decision rests with the master of the games, but I see no reason to deny you.
The steward inclined his head.
As you say, my lord.
Dunk tried to stammer out thanks, but Prince Maekar cut him off.
Very well, sir, you are grateful. Now be off with you.
You must forgive my noble brother, sir, said Prince Baylor. Two of his sons have gone astray on their way here, and he fears for them. The spring rains have swollen many of the streams, said Dunk. Perhaps the princes are only delayed.
I did not come here to take counsel from a hedge knight, Prince Maekar declared to his brother. You may go, sir, Prince Baylor told Dunk, not unkindly.
Yes, my lord.
He bowed and turned. But before he could get away, the prince called after him.
Sir, one thing more. You are not of Sir Arlen's blood?
Yes, my lord, I'm not.
The prince nodded at the battered shield Dunk carried and the winged chalice upon its face.
By law, only a true-born son is entitled to inherit a knight's arms. You must needs find a new device, sir, a sigil of your own.
I will, said Dunk. Thank you again, your grace. I will fight bravely. You'll see.
As brave as Baylor Breakspear, the old man would often say.
The wine sellers and sausage makers were doing a brisk trade, and whores walked brazenly among the stalls and pavilions. Some were pretty enough, one red-haired girl in particular. He could not help staring at her breasts, the way they moved under her loose shift as she sauntered past. He thought of the silver in his pouch.
I could have her if I liked. She'd like the clink of my coin well enough. I could take her back to my camp and have her all night if I wanted.
He had never lain with a woman, and for all he knew he might die in his first tilt. Tourneys could be dangerous, but whores could be dangerous too. The old man had warned him of that.
She might rob me while I slept, and what would I do then?
When the red-haired girl glanced back over her shoulder at him, Dunk shook his head and walked away. He found Egg at the puppet show, sitting cross-legged on the ground with the hood of his cloak pulled all the way forward to hide his baldness. The boy had been afraid to enter the castle, which Dunk put down to equal parts shyness and shame.
He does not think himself worthy to mingle with lords and ladies, let alone great princes.
It had been the same with him when he was little. The world beyond Fleabottom had seemed as frightening as it was exciting.
Egg needs time, that's all.
For the present, it seemed kinder to give the lad a few coppers and let him enjoy himself among the stalls than to drag him along unwilling into the castle. This morning, the puppeteers were doing the tale of Florian and Jonquil. The fat Dornish woman was working Florian in his armor made of motley, while the tall girl held Jonquil's strings.
You are no knight,
she was saying as the puppet's mouth moved up and down.
I know you. You are Florian the Fool.
I am, my lady,
the other puppet answered, kneeling.
as great a fool as ever lived, and as great a knight as well."
"A fool and a knight?" said Jonquil. "I have never heard of such a thing."
"Sweet lady," said Florian, "all men are fools and all men are knights where women are concerned."
It was a good show, sad and sweet both, with a sprightly sword fight at the end, and a nicely painted giant. When it was over, the fat woman went among the crowd to collect coins, while the girl packed away the puppets. Dunk collected Egg and went up to her.
"My lord,"
she said, with a sideways glance and a half-smile. She was a head shorter than he was, but still taller than any other girl he had ever seen.
"That was good,"
Egg enthused.
"I like how you make them move, Jonquil and the dragon and all. I saw a puppet show last year, but they moved all jerky. Yours are more smooth."
"Thank you,"
she told the boy politely. Dunk said, "Your figures are well carved too. The dragon especially, a fearsome beast. You make them yourself?" She nodded.
"My uncle does the carving. I paint them."
"Could you paint something for me? I have the coin to pay."
He slipped the shield off his shoulder and turned it to show her.
"I need to paint something over the chalice."
The girl glanced at the shield and then at him.
"What would you want painted?"
Dunk had not considered that. If not the old man's winged chalice, what? His head was empty. "Dunk the Lunk, thick as a castle wall."
I'm not certain.
His ears were turning red, he realized miserably.
"You must think me an utter fool."
She smiled.
"All men are fools, and all men are knights."
"What color paint do you have?"
he asked, hoping that might give him an idea.
"I can mix paints to make any color you want."
The old man's brown had always seemed drab to Dunk.
"The field should be the color of sunset," he said suddenly. "The old man liked sunsets, and the device."
"An elm tree?"
said Egg.
"A big elm tree, like the one by the pool, with a brown trunk and green branches."
"Yes,"
Dunk said.
"That would serve. An elm tree, but with a shooting star above. Could you do that?"
The girl nodded.
"Give me the shield. I'll paint it this very night and have it back to you on the morrow."
Dunk handed it over.
"I am called Sir Duncan the Tall."
"I'm Tanzel,"
she laughed.
"Tanzel Too Tall, the boys used to call me."
"You're not too tall," Dunk blurted out.
"You're just right for..."
He realized what he had been about to say and blushed furiously.
"For,"
said Tanzel, cocking her head inquisitively.
"Puppets,"
he finished lamely.
The sun was low in the west by the time they saw the lake, its waters glimmering red and gold, bright as a sheet of beaten copper. When they glimpsed the turrets of the inn above some willows, Dunk donned his sweaty tunic once again and stopped to splash some water on his face. He washed off the dust of the road as best he could and ran wet fingers through his thick mop of sun-streaked hair. There was nothing to be done for his size or the scar that marked his cheek, but he wanted to make himself appear somewhat less the wild robber knight. The inn was bigger than he'd expected, a great gray sprawl of a place, timbered and turreted, half of it built on pilings out over the water. A road of rough-cut planks had been laid down over the muddy lake shore to the ferry landing, but neither the ferry nor the ferryman were in evidence. Across the road stood a stable with a thatched roof. A dry stone wall enclosed the yard, but the gate was open. Within, they found a well and a watering trough.
"See to the animals," Dunk told Egg, "but see that they don't drink too much. I'll ask about some food."
He found the innkeeper sweeping off the steps.
"Are you come for the fairy?" the woman asked him. "You're too late. The sun's going down, and Ned don't like to cross by night unless the moon is full. He'll be back first thing in the morning."
"Do you know how much he asks?"
3 pennies for each of you and 10 for your horses."
"We have 2 horses and a mule."
"It's 10 for mules as well."
Dunk did the sums in his head and came up with 6 and 30, more than he had hoped to spend. Last time I came this way, it was only 2 pennies and 6 for horses.
Take that up with Ned. It's not to me. If you're looking for a bed, I've none to offer. Lord Shawnee and Lord Costain brought their retinues. I'm full to bursting.
Is Lord Peak here as well? He killed Sir Arlen's squire. He was with Lord Cockshaw and John the Fiddler.
Ned took them across on his last run.
She looked Dunk up and down.
Were you part of their company?
We met them on the road, is all. A good smell was drifting out of the windows of the inn, one that made Dunk's mouth water. We might like some of what you're roasting if it's not too costly.
It's wild boar, the woman said, well peppered and served with onions, mushrooms, and mashed neeps.
We could do without the neeps. Some slices off the boar and a tankard of your good brown ale would do for us. How much would you ask for that? And maybe we could have a place on your stable floor to bed down for the night?
That was a mistake. The stables are for horses. That's why we call them stables. You're big as a horse, I'll grant you, but I see only 2 legs.
She swept her broom at him to shoo him off.
I can't be expected to feed all the 7 kingdoms. The boar is for my guests. So is my ale. I won't have lords saying that I run short of food or drink before they were surfeit. The lake is full of fish, and you'll find some other rogues camped down by the stumps. Hedge knights, if you believe them.
Her tone made it quite clear that she did not.
Might be they'd have food to share. It's not to me. Away with you now, I've work to do.
The door closed with a solid thump behind her, before Dunk could even think to ask where he might find these stumps. He found Egg sitting on the horse trough, soaking his feet in the water and fanning his face with his big floppy hat.
Are they roasting pigs, sir? I smell pork.
Wild boar, said Dunk in a glum tone. But who wants boar when we have good salt beef? Egg made a face.
Can I please eat my boots instead, sir? I'll make a new pair out of the salt beef. It's tougher.
No, Dunk said, trying not to smile. You can't eat your boots. One more word and you'll eat my fist, though. Get your feet out of that trough. He found his great helm on the mule and slung it underhand at Egg. Draw some water from the well and soak the beef. Unless you soaked it for a good long time, the salt beef was like to break your teeth. It tasted best when soaked in ale, but water would serve. Don't use the trough, either. I don't care to taste your feet.
My feet could only improve the taste, sir, Egg said, wriggling his toes. But he did as he was bid.
The hedge knights did not prove hard to find. Egg spied their fire flickering in the woods along the lakeshore, so they made for it, leading the animals behind them. The boy carried Dunk's helm beneath one arm, sloshing with each step he took. By then, the sun was a red memory in the west. Before long, the trees opened up, and they found themselves in what must once have been a weirwood grove. Only a ring of white stumps and a tangle of bone-pale roots remained to show where the trees had stood, when the children of the forest ruled in Westeros. Among the weirwood stumps, they found 2 men squatting near a cook fire, passing a skin of wine from hand to hand. Their horses were cropping at the grass beyond the grove, and they had stacked their arms and armor in neat piles. A much younger man sat apart from the other two, his back against a chestnut tree.
"Well met, sirs," Dunk called out in a cheerful voice.
It was never wise to take armed men unawares.
I am called Sir Duncan the Tall. The lad is Egg. May we share your fire?
A stout man of middling years rose to greet them, garbed in tattered finery. Flamboyant ginger whiskers framed his face.
Well met, Sir Duncan. You are a large one, and most welcome, certainly, as is your lad. Egg, was it? What sort of name is that, pray?
A short one, sir. Egg knew better than to admit that Egg was short for Aegon, not to men he did not know.
Indeed! What happened to your hair?
Rootworms, Dunk thought. Tell him it was rootworms, boy. That was the safest story, the tale they told most often, though sometimes Egg took it in his head to play some childish game.
I shaved it off, sir. I mean to stay shaven until I earn my spurs.
A noble vow. I am Sir Kyle, the cat of Misty Moor. Under yonder chestnut sits Sir Glendon, Ball. And here you have the good Sir Maynard Plum.
Egg's ears pricked up at that name. Plum? Are you kin to Lord Viserys Plum, sir?
Distantly, confessed Sir Maynard, a tall, thin, stoop-shouldered man with long, straight flaxen hair, though I doubt that his lordship would admit to it. One might say that he is of the sweet plums, whilst I am of the sour.
Plum's cloak was as purple as name, though frayed about the edges and badly dyed. A moonstone brooch big as a hen's egg fastened it at the shoulder. Elsewise, he wore dun-colored rough-spun and stained brown leather.
"We have salt beef," said Dunk. "Sir Maynard has a bag of apples," said Kyle the Cat. "And I have pickled eggs and onions. Why, together we have the makings of a feast. Be seated, sir. We have a fine choice of stumps for your comfort. We will be here until mid-morning, unless I miss my guess. There is only the one ferry, and it is not big enough to take us all. The lords and their tails must cross first."
"Help me with the horses," Dunk told Egg. Together, the two of them unsaddled Thunder, Rain, and Maester. Only when the animals had been fed and watered and hobbled for the night did Dunk accept the wineskin that Sir Maynard offered him.
"Even sour wine is better than none," said Kyle the Cat. "We'll drink finer vintages at White Walls. Lord Butterwell is said to have the best wines north of the Arbor. He was once the king's hand, as his father's father was before him, and he is said to be a pious man besides, and very rich."
"His wealth is all from cows," said Maynard Plum. "He ought to take a swollen udder for his arms. These Butterwells have milk running in their veins, and the Freys are no better. This will be a marriage of cattle thieves and toll collectors, one lot of coin clinkers joining with another. When the Black Dragon rose, this Lord of Cows sent one son to Daemon and one to Daeron to make certain there was a Butterwell on the winning side. Both perished on the red grass field, and his youngest died in the spring. That's why he's making this new marriage. Unless this new wife gives him a son, Butterwell's name will die with him, as it should."
Sir Glendon Ball gave his sword another stroke with the whetstone.
"The warrior hates cravens."
The scorn in his voice made Dunk give the youth a closer look. Sir Glendon's clothes were of good cloth, but well-worn and ill-matched, with the look of hand-me-downs. Tufts of dark brown hair stuck out from beneath his iron half-helm. The lad himself was short and chunky, with small, close-set eyes, thick shoulders and muscular arms. His eyebrows were shaggy as two caterpillars after a wet spring, his nose bulbous, his chin pugnacious. And he was young. 16 might be, no more than 18. Dunk might have taken him for a squire if Sir Kyle had not named him with a sir. The lad had pimples on his cheeks in place of whiskers.
"How long have you been a knight?" Dunk asked him.
"Long enough. Half a year when the moon turns. I was knighted by Sir Morgan Dunstable of Tumbler's Falls. 2 dozen people saw it. But I have been training for knighthood since I was born. I rode before I walked, and knocked a grown man's tooth out of his head before I lost any of my own. I mean to make my name at White Walls and claim the Dragon's Egg."
"The Dragon's Egg? Is that the champion's prize, truly?"
The last dragon had perished half a century ago. Ser Arlen had once seen a clutch of her eggs, though. "They were hard as stone," he said, "but beautiful to look upon," the old man had told Dunk. How could Lord Butterwell come by a dragon's egg?
King Aegon presented the egg to his father's father after guesting for a night in his old castle, said Ser Maynard Plum.
Was it a reward for some act of valor? Asked Dunk.
Ser Kyle chuckled.
Some might call it that. Supposedly old Lord Butterwell had 3 young maiden daughters when his grace came calling. By morning all 3 had royal bastards in their little bellies. A hot night's work, that was.
Dunk had heard such talk before. Aegon the Unworthy had bedded half the maidens in the realm and fathered bastards on the lot of them, supposedly. Worse, the old king had legitimized them all upon his deathbed. The base-born ones, born of tavern wenches, whores, and shepherd girls, and the great bastards, whose mothers had been high-born.
We'd all be bastard sons of old King Aegon if half these tales were true.
And who's to say we're not? Ser Maynard quipped.
You ought to come with us to White Walls, Ser Duncan, urged Ser Kyle. Your size is sure to catch some lordling's eye. You might find good service there. I know I shall. Joffrey Caswell will be at this wedding, the Lord of Bitterbridge. When he was 3, I made him his first sword. I carved it out of pine to fit his hand. In my greener days, my sword was sworn to his father.
Was that one carved from pine as well? Ser Maynard asked.
Kyle the Cat had the grace to laugh.
That sword was good steel, I assure you. I should be glad to ply it once again in the service of the centaur. Ser Duncan, even if you do not choose to tilt, do join us for the wedding feast. There will be singers and musicians, jugglers and tumblers, and a troupe of comic dwarfs.
Dunk frowned.
Egg and I have a long journey before us. We are headed north to Winterfell. Lord Baron Stark is gathering swords to drive the krakens from his shores for good.
Too cold up there for me, said Ser Maynard. If you want to kill krakens, go west. The Lannisters are building ships to strike back at the Iron Men on their home islands. That's how you put an end to Dagon Greyjoy. Fighting him on land is fruitless. He just slips back to sea. You have to beat him on the water.
That had the ring of truth, but the prospect of fighting Iron Men at sea was not one that Dunk relished. He'd had a taste of that on the White Lady, sailing from Dorne to Old Town, when he'd donned his armor to help the crew repel some raiders. The battle had been desperate and bloody, and once he'd almost fallen in the water. That would have been the end of him.
The throne should take a lesson from Stark and Lannister, declared Ser Kyle the Cat. At least they fight. What do the Targaryens do? King Aerys hides among his books. Prince Rhaegal prances naked through the Red Keep's halls, and Prince Maekar broods at Summerhall.
Aegg was prodding at the fire with a stick to send sparks floating up into the night. Dunk was pleased to see him ignoring the mention of his father's name. Perhaps he's finally learned to hold that tongue of his.
Myself, I blame Bloodraven, Ser Kyle went on. He is the king's hand, yet he does nothing, whilst the krakens spread flame and terror up and down the sunset sea.
Ser Maynard gave a shrug.
His eye is fixed on Tyrosh, where Bittersteel sits in exile, plotting with the sons of Daemon Blackfyre, so he keeps the king's ships close at hand, lest they attempt to cross.
Aye, that may well be, Ser Kyle said, but many would welcome the return of Bittersteel. Bloodraven is the root of all our woes, the white worm gnawing at the heart of the realm.
Dunk frowned, remembering the hunchbacked Septon at Stony Sept.
Words like that can cost a man his head. Some might say you're talking treason. How can the truth be treason? Asked Kyle the Cat. In King Daeron's day, a man did not have to fear to speak his mind. But now?
He made a rude noise.
Bloodraven put King Ares on the Iron Throne, but for how long? Ares is weak, and when he dies, it will be bloody war between Lord Rivers and Prince Makar for the crown, the hand against the heir.
You have forgotten Prince Rhaegal, my friend, Ser Maynard objected in a mild tone. He comes next in line to Ares, not Makar, and his children after him.
Rhaegal is feeble-minded. Why, I bear him no ill will, but the man is good as dead. And those twins of his as well, though whether they will die of Makar's mace or Bloodraven's spells. Seven save us, Dunk thought as Egg spoke up, shrill and loud.
Prince Makar is Prince Rhaegal's brother. He loves him well. He'd never do harm to him or his.
Be quiet, boy, Dunk growled at him. These knights want none of your opinions.
I can talk if I want.
No, said Dunk. You can't. That mouth of yours will get you killed someday, and me as well, most like. That salt beef's soaked long enough, I think. A strip for all our friends, and be quick about it.
Egg flushed, and for half a heartbeat, Dunk feared the boy might talk back. Instead, he settled for a sullen look, seething as only a boy of 11 years can seethe.
Aye, Ser, he said, fishing in the bottom of Dunk's helm. His shaven head shone redly in the firelight as he passed out the salt beef.
Dunk took his piece and worried at it. The soak had turned the meat from wood to leather, but that was all. He sucked on one corner, tasting the salt and trying not to think about the roast boar at the inn, crackling on its spit and dripping fat. As dusk deepened, flies and stinging midges came swarming off the lake. The flies preferred to plague their horses, but the midges had a taste for man flesh. The only way to keep from being bitten was to sit close to the fire, breathing smoke.
Cook or be devoured, Dunk thought glumly. Now there's a beggar's choice.
He scratched at his arms and edged closer to the fire. The wineskin soon came round again. The wine was sour and strong. Dunk drank deep and passed along the skin, whilst the Cat of Misty Moor began to talk of how he had saved the life of the Lord of Bitterbridge during the Blackfyre Rebellion.
When Lord Armand's banner-bearer fell, I leapt down from my horse with traitors all around us.
Sir, said Glendon Ball, who were these traitors?
The Blackfyre men, I meant.
Firelight glimmered off the steel in Ser Glendon's hand. The pockmarks on his face flamed as red as open sores, and his every sinew was wound as tight as a crossbow.
My father fought for the Black Dragon.
This again, Dunk snorted. Red or black was not a thing you asked a man. It always made for trouble.
I am sure Ser Kyle meant no insult to your father.
None, Ser Kyle agreed. It's an old tale, the Red Dragon and the Black. No sense for us to fight about it now, lad. We are all brothers of the hedges here.
Ser Glendon seemed to weigh the cat's words to see if he was being mocked.
Damon Blackfyre was no traitor. The old king gave him the sword. He saw the worthiness in Damon, even though he was born bastard. Why else would he put Blackfyre into his hand in place of Daeron's? He meant for him to have the kingdom, too. Damon was the better man.
A hush fell. Dunk could hear the soft crackle of the fire. He could feel midges crawling on the back of his neck. He slapped at them, watching Egg, willing him to be still.
I was just a boy when they fought the Red Grass Field, he said, when it seemed that no one else would speak. But I squired for a knight who fought with the Red Dragon, and later served another who fought for the Black. There were brave men on both sides.
Brave men, echoed Kyle the Cat a bit feebly. Heroes.
Glendon Ball turned his shield about so all of them could see the sigil painted there. A fireball blazing red and yellow across a night-black field.
I come from hero's blood.
Your fireball, son,
Egg said. That was the first time they saw Ser Glendon smile. Ser Kyle the cat studied the boy closely.
How can that be? How old are you?
Quentin Ball died before I was born, Ser Glendon finished, but in me he lives again. He slammed his sword back into its scabbard. I'll show you all at White Walls when I claim the dragon's egg.
The next day, a dozen would-be warriors found their way to Standfast to assemble among the chickens. One was too old, two were too young, and one skinny boy turned out to be a skinny girl. Those Dunk sent back to their villages, leaving 8. 3 Watts, 2 Wills, a Lem, a Pate, and Big Rob, the Lackwit. A sorry lot, he could not help but think. The strapping handsome peasant boys who won the hearts of high-born maidens in the songs were nowhere to be seen. Each man was dirtier than the last. Lem was 50 if he was a day, and Pate had weepy eyes. They were the only two who had ever soldiered before. Both had been gone with Sir Eustace and his sons to fight in the Blackfyre Rebellion. The other 6 were as green as Dunk had feared. All 8 had lice. 2 of the Watts were brothers. Guess your mother didn't know no other name, Bennis said, cackling. As far as arms went, they brought a scythe, 3 hoes, an old knife, some stout wooden clubs. Lem had a sharpened stick that might serve for a spear, and one of the Wills allowed that he was good at chucking rocks. Well and good, Bennis said. We got us a bloody trebuchet. After that, the man was known as Treb. Are any of you skilled with a longbow? Dunk asked them. The men scuffed at the dirt while hens pecked the ground around them. Pate of the weepy eyes finally answered,
Begging your pardon, sir, but my lord don't permit us longbows. Osgray Deers is for the Checky Lions, not the likes of us.
We will get swords and helms and chainmail, the youngest of the 3 Watts wanted to know.
Why, sure you will, said Bennis. Just as soon as you kill one of the widow's knights and strip his bloody corpse. Make sure you stick your arm up his horse's arse, too. That's where you'll find his silver.
He pinched young Watt beneath his arm until the lad squealed in pain, then marched the whole lot of them off to Watt's wood to cut some spears. When they came back, they had 8 fire-hardened spears of wildly unequal length and crude shields of woven branches. Sir Bennis had made himself a spear as well, and he showed them how to thrust with the point and use the shaft to parry, and where to put the point to kill.
The belly and the throat are best, I find.
He pounded his fist against his chest.
Right, there's the heart. That will do the job as well. Trouble is, the ribs is in the way. The belly's nice and soft, gutting slow but certain. Never knew a man to live when his guts was hanging out. Now, if some fool goes and turns his back on you, put your point between his shoulder blades or through his kidney. That's here. They don't live long once you prick him in the kidney.
Having 3 Watts in the company caused confusion when Bennis was trying to tell them what to do.
We should give them village names, sir, Egg suggested. Like Sir Arlan of Pennytree, your old master.
That might have worked, only their villages had no names either.
Well, said Egg, we could call them for their crops, sir.
One village sat amongst bean fields, one planted mostly barley corn, and the third cultivated rows of cabbages, carrots, onions, turnips, and melons. No one wanted to be a cabbage or a turnip, so the last lot became the melons. They ended up with 4 barley corns, 2 melons, and 2 beans. As the brothers Watt were both barley corns, some further distinction was required. When the younger brother made mention of once having fallen down the village well, Bennis dubbed him Wet Watt, and that was that. The men were thrilled to have been given lords' names, save for Big Rob, who could not seem to remember whether he was a bean or a barleycorn. Once all of them had names and spears, Sir Eustace emerged from Standfast to address them. The old knight stood outside the tower door, wearing his mail and plate beneath a long woolen surcoat that age had turned more yellow than white. On front and back it bore the Checky Lion sewn in little squares of green and gold.
"Lads," he said. You all remember Dake. The Red Widow threw him in a sack and drowned him. She took his life, and now she thinks to take our water, too, the Checky water that nourishes our crops. But she will not.
He raised his sword above his head.
For Osgray, he said ringingly, for Standfast. Osgray,
Dunk echoed.
Egg and the recruits took up the shout. Osgray! Osgray! For Standfast! Dunk and Bennis drilled the little company amongst the pigs and chickens, while Sir Eustace watched from the balcony above. Sam Stoops had stuffed some old sacks with soiled straw. Those became their fur.